Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody.
Woohoo!
It is September. We are exactly 2 months. It's September 5th. I think we're exactly 2 months from the start of the college basketball season. Here at Hoops HD, we decided to we haven't been doing as much as normal during the off season, but we got to get a little show together here for you. But I'm your
Yeah,
host, Chad Sherwood. We got, as always, David Griggs over there. We
we've
got
been
Rocco.
taking the off season very seriously. We have not been doing, we've been off.
We've been seriously off. Yeah.
Seriously off.
We got Rocco Miller joining us from Bracketeer.org. And we got Zach Singer joining us, the proud new father. Congratulations, first of all, Zach.
Thank you very
And
much, and I really appreciate the way programming is here. We decided the opening night of the NFL season was exactly the time during the opening night game when everybody wanted to talk about MTE scheduling with Rocco and I. And I couldn't agree more, personally.
It is the more exciting topic, no
It
doubt.
is. What's the NFL?
Yeah, did that open?
That's the MTE in Moncton. That's the
Okay.
one that Rocco was
Oh.
breaking. So we're good on that.
Greg, so I know you let me turn over to you to start this off here. You wanted to talk some scheduling, and I wanted to throw it over to you to start because you're the one that really called up this subject for the night.
Well, yeah, it's just as more and more schedules come out, I'm becoming more and more irritated at the way a lot of programs, not the power programs, but not even just them, are building their schedules. They want to play 10 home games. They want them all guaranteed. Even the radar teams that we like are scheduling, in my opinion, a few too many non-D1s. The games that I think that most pique our interest and that would serve the sport for the best are the upper level under the radar schools getting to play up against top 40, top 50 teams. And I just figured, well, let's get on the air and talk about this. We have Rocco Miller, who is a scheduling consultant. I know I've asked you
In
your
fact,
title
before we
before.
go any further, Griggs, I just want to throw out there, if you're looking for schedules, go to Bracketeer.org because Rocco is the god of schedules at both getting games together and then posting these schedules out there. But go ahead, Griggs. I'm sorry.
What is your title? I mean,
Thanks,
aside
Chad.
from bracketeer schedule, what is your title, Rocco?
I mean, it's essentially a college hoops junkie for all purposes, but
Yeah, okay,
the
that's where I am.
foundation of everything is the NCAA tournament, right? So you can run with Joe Lenardi's term of bracketologist, which is obviously the focus during the season, but scheduling is consuming me throughout the offseason. So yeah, so I am consulting teams in all 31 leagues, RIP to the Pac-12. We used to have 32, but anyway, yeah, I think it's become an interesting role. Started with COVID, a lot of teams calling, trying to figure out if they could put a game together on the fly. 90%+ of those failed, but a few of them actually worked, and that was all the confidence I needed to believe in being able to put games together, whether it's for any kind of game, a series, a neutral court game, an MTE, a bye game. The only thing I do not help with is non-Division One games.
And as you should not. So Rocco, like you actively act as a consultant and try and get games together, and you're a good person, in my opinion, to consult with because you have an understanding of many of the different metrics. You certainly have an understanding of what the selection committee values and the kinds of games that can pop out on a profile. The first question I have for you is, why isn't everyone listening to you? Because when you look at a lot of these schedules, it's pretty clear that many people are not.
Correct. Well, I think the short answer to that is, the first bullet I'll throw at you, David, is 67 new Division One head coaches coming into this year is another new record. That's a record that keeps beating itself. And a lot of games, even though on the surface they sound like a great idea, and if I was actually able to force teams to play games, we would see much better schedules. But job security is paramount with 80% or more of the programs nationwide at all levels. And you can look at each league, whether we start with the NEC or the Big East, doesn't really matter. There's coaches in each of those leagues that feel like they can take more chances, can play bigger games, can afford a few more losses than the rest of their league, where the coaches are like really coaching on a year-to-year basis. Even if they have a 5-year contract, they could easily be gone this year. And so it's the pressure of the sport with it getting bigger and more watched and more popular and now trying to go global. That is putting pressure on each individual coach. And as long as the coaches have final say on who they're going to play or who they're not going to play, this problem's only going to get worse.
And many coaches do have the final say. At least it is, I guess the AD technically does, but in a handshake agreement, they're not going to overrule a coach in most circumstances. But
Correct.
I hear what you're saying, and I actually understand that maybe better than what I let on or realize. I mean, there is a lot of pressure on coaches, and one of the things that they know that they need to do is win, and the kinds of games that are easy to win are not necessarily the kind of games that are intriguing or fun to play or fun to watch. But at the same time, I'll let this. We have two other people here that need to talk to, and we got a lot to get to other than my nonsense. But isn't getting to the tournament a great way to keep your job? And to do that, shouldn't you schedule a little differently than what a lot of schools are choosing to?
Absolutely. You know, in my philosophy, two cents, watching this game my whole life, like you guys, I think teams get tougher with a tougher schedule. You learn something about your team. You want to, you know, and that's what's, you know, my bread and butter is working with those kind of next four or five leagues after the Power Five, because they're the ones trying to play Power Five teams, typically being told no, and then needing to play each other. And that's where I think I have the most success in putting games together. You know, you can see here in my backyard, San Francisco, Santa Clara, St. Mary's, all schedule excellent or very good for their level. Santa Clara's taking on nine strategic games. Washington State's new to the league here in the West Coast Conference. They're taking on nine strategic games. So I really think that level is bought in because they know, you know, if things break right, they go 7-2, 8-1 in that many chances, they're going to be on the radar the rest of the year. And then you take down a St. Mary's or a Gonzaga, you can really, you know, solidify yourself. San Francisco a couple of years ago with Todd Golden proved that safely in as the highest 10 seed. But not everybody's in that kind of position. You know, it's starting to carry over to the Atlantic 10 and the AAC and certainly the Mountain West getting 6 in last year. They've kind of been on board for a while. So now we see a new mandate in the Missouri Valley Conference, which I think, you know, it doesn't make sense a lot for like Illinois, Chicago, or Valparaiso, or an Evansville, who are kind of buried at the bottom right now. But for the rest of the league, I love it. They all have to play at least four quad one or quad two games. That's new this year. Very excited about it. The coaches hate it, but I think it's good for everybody else. You know, you can pull up Illinois State's schedule right now, and you're like, wow, they're playing Cornell. That's unusual. And you know, St. Louis, not
That's a
St. Louis,
good
but
game,
yeah, but
really.
like Bradley took a road game at Washington State because of that mandate. Like, there's a lot of cool things happening. We need more leagues to be like the Missouri Valley, and I'm really curious to see what that does to the league as a whole. The league, of course, is determined to get a two-bid Valley every year, and they kind of need to hit a inside straight most seasons to do that. And they're hoping this will hope produce a little bit more, you know, optimal results for the two bid scenario.
We
So yeah,
will.
so within the top 100, you're seeing way more matchups, which is good. But you know, if everybody just goes 500 in those games, we're kind of left with the same outcome.
Yeah. Well,
I think
we
there's
really need
some.
some coaches to go back to the old John Chaney, you know, being out of the Philadelphia area. I'll play anyone, anywhere, anytime. And you know, I'm going back 20 plus years now, 30 years almost. But yeah, Temple teams not playing in a power conference that were losing 12, 13 games a year and getting solid NCAA tournament seeds. So it's possible.
I think to some small extent, Chad and Rocco can chime in on this with his expertise. Now, you know, coaches are naturally like paranoid types. It's why I love college basketball coaches, but I say this respectfully, and as a UConn fan, got the number one one. They're insane people, right? They're always thinking of what's going to go wrong.
Yes, they all are. Every one
Especially
of them.
Dan Hurley.
So, yes, especially. So to that degree now, coaches are so worried. It's why they all complain about the portal and all that. 10 years ago, when you knew you had like five guys or seven guys returning on your roster and you kind of knew what you had, maybe you'll go schedule a game against a mid-pack AAC team or an A-10 game. But now with everybody's roster turned over, especially at the mid-major level where you're pulling guys up from lower leagues and you're hoping their game can translate. Like, it's one thing for UConn to hope that Cam Spencer's game translates out of the Big Ten to the Big East, but when you're Missouri Valley, school, even a strong one, and you're going and getting like the best player from like the Southland, you're hoping that translates to some degree. You're banking on the success of your team to go to the next level in that, but you don't know until the games start. And these coaches who are paranoid about, getting to the tournament, all they're thinking, a lot of them, is if this doesn't work, it's a disaster and I get fired. And I don't even know this. I can't even predict this roster yet because I haven't seen these guys play. Rocco, are you hearing that sort of concern from coaches when they do these schedules that they don't really know what they can trust in their own locker room yet?
There's a lot of truth to what you said, Zach. I think they don't say it exactly like that, but I think
Yeah,
there
I
has to
hope
be
not.
an right. But there has to be an answer when things don't go according to plan. And so basically, before they'll commit to a game, to move forward on a game, get it sign the contract, etc., they have to kind of think through all the scenarios. What's the best that can happen from this game? What's the worst that can happen? And what's happened in this last cycle and maybe even last year too, is I've heard probably 20 to 25 reasons to not play a game, and usually there's only one or two to do it. And I look at everything mathematically, so I think on every phone call you've got less than 4% chance of things happening the way you want it to, sitting in my seat. So I have to make about 25 phone calls to get one game. It's kind of the math on that. But that's really the truth behind it, Zach. You laid it out really well, because VCU is fine. Ryan Odom's in his second year. They're actually projected to win the A-10 if you look at Torvik right now. Or so they're at least going to be in the hunt for the championship. But they started their regime by losing to McNeese on opening night last year. And that was a lot of questions they had to answer right there after one game on the job. So
Yeah,
that's.
everybody was saying we will wait. Why would you schedule them? They were going to be
Yeah,
really
what were you
strong.
thinking? Yeah.
Wayne was even
So,
there for that game, remember?
that's
Also,
very that's
so.
a very good point. Will Wade's assistance. And also to that point,
That's
Rocco, I'll
right.
let you finish. So many of
No, no
these
problem.
teams and schools, they've just watched their best player go to a bigger league. So I don't think that coach is going to turn around and go, why don't we go schedule like Iowa on the road or something? Like they're not in the mentality to go, unfortunately. Like as
Well,
a
Iowa,
fan,
if they're a top 250 team, I don't think Iowa has a whole lot of interest in scheduling them either.
that's a good
No.
point. But Rocco, you can finish in terms of it's just so hard to get.
It
It's hard
is.
enough to, it was hard to schedule a game 10 years ago, but now there's just so many variables.
So many more variables, and I think you could easily argue one of the other hiccups too is, up in, I don't know where Hawaii is now. I know as of like a month
Oh,
ago, they
it's
still.
west of California.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I
Down the
don't know where they
Pacific.
are. I should be more specific on that, where Hawaii is scholarship wise, but I know as of about a month ago, they were one of the teams that still had four open spots. And
Yeah.
one of the reasons Hawaii was stuck on a couple of dates is no coach wants to play a team with four open spots. For all they know, somebody might quit a Power Five team and come play for Hawaii. They actually have a pretty decent NIL for the Big West. And so that's just one example, but I feel like there's at least one team like that in every single league, if not more. You saw, perhaps you guys all saw Bethune-Cookman announce their roster last week, and all of a sudden they've got five former higher level players playing at Bethune-Cookman.
Yep.
So that can happen literally anywhere now. I think the biggest early example as this new wave of NIL and portal roster construction has really taken off was Southern Miss a couple of years ago. They had a team that was coming off of a 300 plus ranked net horrible ranking in Jay Ladner's first year. The very next year they were a top 60 team. So that's a 260 spot jump. So we're seeing a couple extremes like that each year now. And that's really pumped the brakes on a lot of scheduling decisions.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to be Homer about the back-to-back champs, but one thing I think, and this appeals, Rocco, to your math background, that and UConn has done this the last couple of years, and people are now writing the articles about it, partially because of the success, but partially because it makes what they're doing is clearly there is an impact on the net, no matter what they say, in margin of victory. Like it's not directly there, but it's there, and it is more valuable, unfortunately, for a team like UConn to go out there, play a team that's 330 in the net and beat them by 40, then to play a team that's 200 and beat them by 10. Your net gets impacted way more. And UConn announced the schedule this week. And they're at Texas and Baylor. They're also playing Texas A&M Commerce and they're playing Maryland Eastern Shore. They're playing like not just bottom, but like the bottom. And the goal is to just beat those teams by 50 because you're not gonna. Now we have wins above bubble getting factored in. The wins above bubble for those games, I look, they're 0.02. But the net impact, if you beat win that game by 40, is unfortunately better than if you go and played UMass and beat them by 15. Are you
Okay.
hearing kind of
Yeah.
that, Rocco?
Yeah, so I think that's a very unique thing to the top 30 or so teams. And
Okay.
again, that's the world you're going to be living in for a long time. So you might as well stay there. But
Yeah, that's fair. It's not easy to beat someone by 40. I forget. Sorry.
right. Well, because well, what we've seen here, and Chad knows this, and I think David knows this too. What we've seen here since the net has transitioned the way they look at team sheets, the way they seed teams. So the net itself plus the KenPom, and now Bart Torvik will replace the Sagarin on the team sheet this year. That's going to matter a lot between, if you have a cluster of six teams battling for ones and two seeds, that will actually help them, right? Because they'll favor those predictive metrics for seeding more so than selection. I think the wins above bubble, the strength of record, the KPI, that's going to be about getting the 68 teams correct. And getting the bubble correct. But once you got your 68, then all those other like style points, that's where you could be the difference between a two seed and a three seed, right? So that's, and if you can afford it, like UConn's got the budget, Iowa State's got the budget,
Right.
the net might expect you to win by 28.8, and you go win by 42, the net's gonna really like you. And then, you go lose a heartbreaker at Seton Hall or something, it really won't matter for your net because you're so far above the break-even point that those losses really won't matter too much. So that's why you saw like a what was how many losses did Alabama have last year? I think 11. They had 11 loss team. Usually you kind of hold your nose at that for a top four seed. They still easily got a four seed.
Yeah, and they should have, and
I know
I
it's a
think
soft loss.
you're saying the margin of victory like does have an impact on the net, and it has an impact on the net, but I think it is so infinitesimal because a weak schedule opponent will also have an impact on a net the other way, and at the end of the day, I think what pops is not the net, whether it's 12th or 7th or 19th or 13th or whatever minute. I think that's a minuscule difference. What pops is the quad one and quad two, all up and down the team
Correctly.
sheet. And
Yeah.
my advice would be to not do that. Now, again, no one's asking for my advice, but if they did, I'm like, don't play those games. Play someone a little better.
Well, and there's every year, David, we're looking at team sheets in February and March,
Yeah.
and we're sitting there and saying, look at that disgusting non-conference strength of schedule. I get you're in the
Yes.
Big Ten, I get you're in the Big 12, but you play nobody. Look, you've got 30 not Quad four wins, congrats. You don't
Yeah.
belong in the NCAA tournament.
Right. Well,
Right. And
33, not 30.
I used Alabama as an example, but they're actually the team that schedules the best out
Yeah,
pretty
they
much
are. And they should have gotten
annually.
the seed they got. I
Yeah,
think that's the
well,
one Hartman committee gave them. Yeah.
they've started 3 and 4 before and landed in the top four seeds to end the year, 3 and 4 in the
Yeah.
non-conference because their schedule is just so challenging. And you see Auburn this year following that model a little bit. They've got
Yeah.
a tougher schedule than they've ever had. But again, Bruce Pearl, outside of Nate Oates, like Bruce Pearl, Tom Izzo, Bill Self, those kinds of guys, job security is not an issue. So
Yeah.
why not go get all those games? They do it every year, and that's why.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think last year too played a huge role for why Auburn's doing it this year. Last year, through not really, it wasn't the toughness of schedule that you're used to getting from a Bruce Pearl team. And I think he wanted to, that was more of an anomaly than anything else. Without Rocco trying to have you speak out of turn, I'm fascinated this year to see what Washington State and Oregon State do. It's their first year, they're in the West Coast Conference now. Oregon State has not posted a schedule yet. They're playing at North Texas in terms of a schedule. We don't know they're out of conference other than Oregon State's in the Diamond Head Classic and they're playing at North Texas. Washington State's is out. I'm very interested to see how those two handle a life. I don't know even where to place them in the West Coast Conference. I mean, Washington State, obviously, they lost a great coach. They've got a new coach in. Like, what is their talent level now? Are they still a big fish going into a small pond? Are they a middle of the pack West Coast Conference team for both of these? So, because they have to, their coaching
Yeah, I
staff has
think
to figure
that's
that
what
out.
they
It's
are.
their
Middle of,
coaching staff has the schedule based on what they think they are. And that's going to be
No
fascinating
doubt.
for me to see what Oregon State does.
Well, that's a free plug. Thank you, Zach. You can bracketeer.org just launched the WCC schedule page 2 days ago. So you get a sneak peek on the WCC link there under non-conference schedules. Up there, we have the entire Oregon State schedule already posted. We're just waiting on a date of the
Nice.
Oregon game. So they will have Oregon at home. That'll be a big local opportunity, especially on their home court. You already mentioned they go to North Texas. They are going to play in the Diamond Head Classic, which is a very manageable field, interesting matchup with College of Charleston in the first round. And then, a lot of home bye games, but like it's Oregon State, so they could lose maybe one or two of those or more.
Or all of them.
Yeah,
Yeah, there's
I'm looking
like
at it
four
right now, and yeah, it's a
wins.
bunch of garbage out for that Utah Tech, UC Davis, Sacramento State, Idaho. Come
But they
on.
could lose to UC Davis. They've lost to UC Davis before, and
Yes,
they've
they
lost to
have.
Fullerton before. Like, these are not
And
guaranteed.
I will not favor them against Weber State.
I wouldn't
Yeah.
either.
I will not.
Well,
So
Weber State,
that's
that's a dangerous game.
yeah, that is. So it's for them, that's a program that's undergoing a very weird transition. And in Washington State's case, hey, your entire coaching staff is different. They're like Washington State should be able to be ascendant right now, and it's the total opposite given the year they had last year. And so I know everybody's kind of pulling for the two of them, largely for obvious reasons. But I'm interested in that. And also, Rocco, this so now that the in terms of the MTE side, players era kind of came in as, like the 500-pound gorilla landing in the room. Everybody wanted to go to Players Era Festival. Big promises, big money, and the effect of as teams pull out of other events to go there, that has an inevitable trickle down into all the other MTEs, and it's affecting. Like, are you seeing the effect? I don't know how MTE involved you get
And
personally,
by
but
the way,
very
MTE multi-team
multi-team,
events.
yeah,
Yes, yes.
They are the exempt tournaments. Some may be round robin, some are bracketed. That we'll have, and
Your
we'll get it.
Maui Invitationals,
Yeah,
your
yeah,
Acrisure preseason NIT, all that stuff. Rocco, are you seeing?
yeah,
Are you involved with that and seeing the
yeah.
just last minute fallout of teams just paying 60 grand to go to Vegas, and it's affecting
No,
Miami
it's
and
more than
Moscow?
that.
Yeah,
Yeah, I
that's
mean,
true.
so Creighton's the biggest example. They paid
Yes.
200,000 to get out of the Battle for Atlantis. And again, like the Battle for
Ridiculous.
Atlantis and the Maui Invitational have been the premier events in this sport for the last decade or longer. And so it's unprecedented for a team to pull out of either of those. Creighton did. And the promise is, or has been, for this Players NIL Festival first year, is to pay the players or a pool of money for the players to earn up to $1 million just for participating, and then earn another million throughout the events. Or I guess they had to tweak it because they couldn't officially do it for winning the games. So they've created other the marketing opportunities, advertising, etc., to get up to 2 million for a couple of the teams there. Now there's more and more different things being discussed behind the scenes, let's say. So I don't really know what's going to happen, but I did interview one of the teams, and through that process, it was very fascinating to hear, the way they're approaching it specifically is, all right, if the money's not real, but we still get half of it, it's still worth it and pays way more than any other event. So that would be $500,000, right? And even if it pays a quarter of that, it still pays more than any other event. So for us, like from this one team's perspective, I won't say which team it is, but from their perspective, there it's still worth them taking the risk. They were afraid if they missed out, then some other programs would bypass them, status-wise, perception, etc. And if they are part of the first thing that takes the sport to the next level, that'd be really big for them. So that's how they approached it. They also informed me that if the funding totally falls apart, all eight teams have already got on conference calls and agreed to just play each other on the same schedule in Vegas and pay the bills to rent the arenas. Obviously, that'd be a major failure for the company that is putting it together, but these schools are big enough to be able to afford that. So they've got contingencies upon contingencies upon contingencies heading in, and nobody really knows if the money's real, if it's going to show up. I mean, obviously, there's contracts, but the majority of the money is coming from Gulf countries, and it's never happened before. So really, everybody's in uncharted waters at this point.
Yeah, from
We're
reading
going to
the
be
reporting.
talking a lot of about this as the season approaches and as this tournament gets underway, if it does, which I think it
We'll play the
will. But
games. So they'll play
wow.
the games no matter what, but we just don't
Yeah.
know what the finances will end up being at
But
the end.
you're talking about, dollar amounts that rival, well, they're not quite to what the NCAA tournament games are for the schools, but it's way more than that for the, this is sort of just an unprecedented thing
It
that's
is.
going on here.
Yeah, and to what Rocco said, it's not even, I mean, there is the is are they really going to get paid thing. The other side of this, which is why he mentioned they said they'll play, is my understanding from the reporting is they still don't know that the NCAA is going to approve the event. And there would be nothing worse than suddenly having three major games on your schedule that are not on a team sheet that the NCAA committee cannot factor in to selection, that you are effectively playing three games fewer than the limit. So that's why it's critical for them to be able to say, all right, even if the money's not there, we can put a game together in Las Vegas, and that way it counts and it's a real game.
And they're
Yeah.
huge games. You're talking about a Houston,
Giant.
Alabama as the leadoff game
Massive
of this
top five
event.
game.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about this is they made the promises about getting to, a streaming company. Then they announced the schedule. It's not with a streaming company per se, it's with WBD, so TNT, True TV, Max, it's on Max. But also, they're going like Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Saturday. The Houston, Alabama game is in Las Vegas at the old Grand Garden Arena at the exact same time that Duke, Kansas is at T-Mobile Arena. And if they're doing Tuesday, Wednesday, Saturday, that tells you that they, my read of the situation is they went to try and get a streaming deal. They couldn't get the deal they wanted or for the amount or the time. They went to TV. And if they're doing Tuesday, Wednesday, Saturday, they were not exactly getting the pick of the litter. This feels like they were told by Warner Brothers, who has NBA and NHL, this is what we've got. If you want it, you've got to do it on these days. So in that regard, it's a mess.
It is Thanksgiving week, Tuesday, Wednesday,
Yes.
Saturday.
We've got an 11:30 tip game. Is Rutgers in one of those? Because they're already playing USC in football at 11 on a Friday. Like,
It
they're
could be.
great games. I'm so thrilled that Houston and Alabama will play, even if it's a closed doors match, a dark match before Raw gets filmed because the money falls through. But it does stink that they're going to be playing opposite Duke, Kansas in the same itch. I hope going forward, for all the promises of this thing, that there are some lessons learned from year one, and that it's the thing we talk about, Chad, this sport that we love. Really loves getting it in its own way a lot. And having Duke, Kansas opposite a thing nobody likes, because outside the teams in this thing, Rocco, the Players Era Festival not is popular with the teams. College basketball administrators not really enthused is the vibe I'm getting.
The last thing I'll add to wrap that is, the NCAA is, at least in recent years, not going to bite the hand that feeds them. These eight schools definitely feed them when it comes March
Yes.
Madness time. So basically, what it's going to come down to is, if the event screws over these schools, then the NCAA will hammer the event and they'll still play anyway. If they take care of these schools, then the NCAA will just go ahead and approve it. I mean, that's what's going to happen.
Well, and you're also talking about some of the, not only basketball, but some of the biggest schools in all of college sports, Alabama, Notre Dame. I mean, these are schools
Huge.
that if they wanted to give the middle finger to the NCAA, that they would win.
Yeah, that's a
Of
very good
course.
point. This I
Yeah.
love
So
that
it's only
there's an
going
emphasis.
those two directions.
What is, I know we need to move on from this, but just what is the holdup getting this approved? Like the boxes you have to check to get an MTB approved are not overbearing. You can't be from the same conference. You can't have been in the same one. I forget the rules, Rocco. What is
You
it?
can't
Two in
play the
the last
players a
3 years or
$1 million
something?
per game. Okay.
Well, there's that one too.
Yeah, I mean, I think it might be just as, I don't know for sure, but I just assume it might just be the NCAA working with the schools and the schools saying, hey, don't approve this till we get our money, or whatever, or like we have more assurances. Because I feel like I've talked to more than one school. One of them, all the information I provide came from them, but I've talked to some others and they're saying the same things, like, we don't know how this is going to go, so we're prepared for everything. And if they're saying that same thing to the NCAA, which I'm assuming they are, then the NCAA might just be on standby mode until there's more information.
Yes, and of course, the number one MTE, the one that everything the universe revolves around, first reported by Rocco Miller, the Western Slam in Lethbridge,
I'll be
Alberta,
there.
Canada.
I'll be
That
there.
are you really going to the Lethbridge Slam?
I am definitely going, and it's not official yet, but I might actually be on the call for all six games.
Oh,
All
nice.
right.
Oh,
But
this is
no,
fantastic.
I'm putting this
Now,
out there
just
so they'll send me the contract.
Nate,
So
let's throw the
hopefully they'll
team names
offer it.
out. Let's throw the team names out there, Rocco, for everyone
Yeah.
interested.
Hey, I'm fired up because UC Irvine, probably the preseason pick to win the Big West. And
That's
I encourage them to play in this. So let's hope the Eaters get at least a win up there. And then which I'm sure they will. Towson is for a while, they've been kind of the pick right now in the CAA. A lot of guys back for Towson.
yeah,
And
like thousands.
Kent State's right there in the top two or three in the MAC. So those three all have a good chance to win those leagues. So really good basketball. And then Kennesaw State, who, they've transitioned with Coach Petway. He'll be going into year two. They got some more continuity, and they're moving up to Conference USA. That's a nice fourth team. So I feel like all, each day it's a full round robin, 3 different days, starting on Thanksgiving. Eat some turkey and turn on ESPN Plus.
All
Cool.
right.
I gotta ask, where is Lethbridge? I know
It's
you got
I think
Edmonton,
you
you got
fly
Calgary.
in.
That's all I know about
Yeah.
Alberta.
They told me fly into Calgary and they'll send a bus. The bus is gonna take hour and a half to 2 hours. I think it's straight south.
Okay.
And I think it's a beautiful, it's actually like a beautiful mountains town in not Banff, but kind of in that area. A lot of very popular spot in the summertime, but unfortunately we'll be there for Thanksgiving. So it is what it is.
And it's going to be when you're up there, they're not going to know what you're talking. Like the Thanksgiving date is different for them. They're going to be
Oh,
very
I
confused.
know. It
Oh,
will be we're gonna have so much fun with that.
I'm
It's
so envious
we'll have to
that
do a
you're.
podcast from there for sure.
Yes,
God,
we
yes.
will. We absolutely.
I did not know that. I thought you just announced it. I didn't realize that you're going to Lethbridge. I'm insanely envious.
Well,
Let's
I
send
want to
Zach.
get let's get Zach up there. Let's get everybody up
Yeah.
there. We do a Hoops HD on the road north of the
Right,
border.
yeah, from Canada.
One of my
Yes.
close friends has been his thing is he's very upset that the Great Alaska Shootout isn't a thing anymore and he wants to
I
bring it
am not
back.
over it yet myself.
This is as close to it as I think we're gonna get. So
Yes, it is.
I love it. I
Yes.
was joking about it, but honestly, you put the effort in and they're good teams. Like there's
Yeah.
strong mid-majors in there. So
Yeah, I mean, I was influential in that, but yeah, I don't want to be behind something that doesn't have good basketball. So I was
what?
excited about that. And the other thing I'll say is the government in Canada, so by province, this and the Atlantic Slam, I know you guys watched last year.
Yes.
They're doing a Power Five women's that's got Georgetown in it this year. Super exciting. Georgetown, Cincinnati, Ole Miss. So yeah, like this is all being sponsored by the government of Canada to grow basketball, grow call the interest in college basketball, our game. It's really, really cool because most of these other destination tournaments, whether you go to the Caribbean or Maui or wherever, not Maui's a bad example, but a lot of these destination tournaments, Jamaica Classic, whatever, we've seen all these forever.
Yep.
It's usually expensive to play. You have to put a
Yeah.
commitment to it. You go pay yourself and you get down there and you treat your donors and whatnot. Canada's doing the opposite thing. They're paying teams to come up there. They know it's cold. They know it's Thanksgiving time. Nobody wants to go up there if they don't have to. So they're really trying hard and they're picking these specific communities. Lethbridge in Alberta and Moncton in New Brunswick are two with
Nice.
good arenas to get those specific communities interested in college basketball. And
Yeah, I
also
know
doing
the
a prep
Laval
tournament.
had one last year, which is where the AHL affiliate of the Canadiens is. I mean, it's basically in Montreal, but it's a newer arena. I
It's
think it's
nice.
interesting how they're moving them around too. I like that, Alberta. It Rocco,
Yeah.
thank you for explaining it. Now I understand it because I just see Lethbridge, Alberta, and I don't understand what's going on.
Oh
I'm
yeah.
like,
We're gonna
is
have to
there a
do a good
Lethbridge?
pregame. We're gonna have to do some really good pregame shows,
Yeah.
like the morning of the game, so people understand what's going on up
Please
there.
be
But
like
yeah.
Thanksgiving morning. You don't want to see your family. You know
Yes.
what you want to see? Kennesaw State.
That's
Okay,
what I
Kennesaw
want to
State.
watch Kennesaw State on Thanksgiving. That's what I want to do.
That's
Well,
right.
that's great, Rocco. And the stuff that you do, it's folks don't realize like This is how the sausage is made, so to speak. And I'm very envious. You're kind of doing my dream job there of just, but it's like it's hard work because you got to get for the 100 games you put together, there's probably a 5,000 that you can't. And
Right, exactly. It's hard,
it's a
but
sales job.
it becomes that, correct. And but it's great. Like, you guys love it just as much as me, for sure. And just the challenge of it is fun, and when things come together, it's really exciting. And that it, it's kind of like a drug at that point. It keeps you coming back for something else. All right, let's go find another game. Let's go work on next year. Let's do the so it just perpetual.
Rocco's long-term goal is to get the Yukon Huskies to play in the Yukon, and I'll if you do it, I'll go. If you do it, I'll go. I'll be there.
we need to put we need to put them in Europe, actually. We're kicking, if this goes well this year, they're kicking around some ideas for Europe tournaments,
I
which
mean,
would be big schools.
I know that Luke Murray will be the first person to go there just to talk to some assistant coach at Fenerbahce, who he stole
Oh,
like half a
perfect.
playbook from. Because he's a complete sicko.
Yes, he is. Can confirm.
Yeah, people, why were they successful? Well, the assistant coach watches weird stuff nobody else does. And that's basically it. That's the way he is. So it helped. But thank you.
Smart.
That's the MTE and the non-conference stuff. It's kind of the time of year where really that's all the news we get. Because you're still at Rocco, what are we at? Probably, I know the D1 DACA guys track it. What are we at? Probably 80% of schools have announced.
I think it's closer to 60, but quite honestly, calling around everywhere, it's above 80. It's just a matter of them pressing the button and tweeting something about it. But yeah, there's less than 20% that still need a game.
So kind of looking at this at a more macro level, I think that college basketball needs or could really benefit from the kinds of games that schools don't want to schedule. And there's millions of them, like Houston and Texas. We had wanted that certainly since Houston started coming up in the world, and even more and more recently. Last year we got it. I don't see how anybody that had anything to do with either of those two games could not conclude that it was an awesome experience. So of course it might be 20 years before we get to see it again. That's just one example. Kansas did play Wichita last year. It's the first time I remember them doing it in forever. But there's types of games, like there's the games that we watch, which is all of them, even the bad ones. There's the
Especially
kind
the
of
bad
games
ones.
that the big fans, like the diehard fans, will watch their own team play, or the casual fans. But then there's the games that transcend it, the rivalry games, the NCAA tournament. What I say is, your wife's college roommate doesn't like basketball, but they would be excited about this particular game or event. And that's what needs to be scheduled more of, and that's what we don't see enough of.
Well,
It
yeah, and
seems
you
like we
see
see
it.
less and less of that. Like, why the hell are Houston and Texas not going to play anymore? It's asinine.
And you see on the women's side, which is exploding, experiencing all this explosive growth, like they're taking a, like they're going out of their
Yeah,
way
they're
on the women's
scheduling
side.
showcase games. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a huge event this year. I think actually they just moved the Jimmy V Women's, I believe, or it's a breast cancer benefit one. They're doing a huge event at Barclays Center. In women's basketball, the big showcase games for the last 10 or 20 years, they've played them, but they've really, still been on campus this year. And it's last year the Ally Classic was huge in Charlotte. Absolutely, they sold out the Spectrum Center because I mean it's better basketball than watching the freaking Hornets. This year
Yeah.
they had success because they broke through that mentality of, oh well, can you really sell out a non-conference women's game in the regular season? Yes, in a big NBA arena, yes you can. And now they're putting UConn, Iowa will be in Brooklyn, and there's another game in the doubleheader that I can't remember. But they're starting, the women's side is starting to move to the big non-conference games in the big venues. I do hope they don't they still keep some of them home and homes on
Yeah.
campus. Also, that's my biggest gripe is that, like, especially as the season ticket holder, like I'm thrilled UConn gets Baylor at home. UConn and Texas did this crazy thing, David. You're gonna need to sit down, where each team agreed to play at the other team's home arena.
Wow, has
Some
that ever
precedent,
been
it's
to?
never happened.
Yeah,
But at the same
unprecedented.
time, UConn this year is finishing up a home and home with Gonzaga, in which I would have loved UConn to go to the Kendall last year. Instead, they went to Seattle. I would love Gonzaga to come to Hartford or Storrs. Instead, it's at Madison Square Garden. And I just, I'm am even by my standards, I'm rambling here. I hope
Right.
on the men's side, one thing that I think would really help, it's not just getting those games back that David alluded to, like a Houston, Texas, but can we please get them on campus? Can we please?
Yeah.
I don't need to see them. And I know it's just net rigging. It's just neutral site rigging. I don't need Seton Hall to be playing Hofstra off campus. Like Seton Hall, can you just go to Hempstead, please? Do you have to play at the Nassau Coliseum? Like, I just would love to see these games, like when teams will play in Atlanta instead of playing at Georgia. It's just disappointing. It takes away a lot of what the sport's about, that prepping your team for March.
Just want to jump in here real quick. That the Women's Champions Classic is what you're talking about, December 7th.
Yes,
It's
yes.
doubleheaders: Tennessee, Iowa, Louisville, UConn.
And that's
Those are the two
great.
games.
And it even made
And
like
Barclays Center.
rather big programs like Utah comes to mind when, and Utah has a pretty, bought in passionate fan base, but you look at them in November and December and the types of games, there were a few years they didn't even play BYU. They don't play the Beehive opponents. They don't play, it seems like that they pick on the bottom teams outside the 250, and then you turn the TV on and the arena's half empty. And there's half empty arenas all over the country, not just at the low level unsuccessful programs, but for brand name storied programs. And it's because they're not playing the kinds of games that normal people want to go watch.
Well, and the example on the men's side is that Vegas showdown we alluded to. Like, I know why they can do it. I know it's going to be sold out. It's going to be a huge deal with the Cooper flag. But man, Kansas Duke not being at Allen Fieldhouse or Cameron Indoor, just it loses so much of the what you watch college basketball for. Like, it's a hard sell for the sport early in the season. It was last year when UConn went to Allen Fieldhouse, first time they ever played there. But they also scheduled on a Friday night opposite the last Pac-12 football championship game at 9 p.m. And I just wish the sport
Okay,
could foster its own good, the things it has for it, which are the great on-campus environments. We get a lot of the games. We don't get as many as we want, but then
but
when
we
we do get them, they are in neutral sites with
okay.
boosters.
There's a million I could name, but there's one, and it's a crime. Duke and Maryland, Rocco. Why can't you have Duke and Maryland schedule each other?
That's probably more on Duke, from what I understand.
It is, yeah.
Maryland and Georgetown actually just came together, which
Did
my
they really? Oh, I
yes,
did not
yep,
know that. Did they
yeah.
really?
So that starts next year, and they'll do a. Isn't it a 4-year deal? I think it's a 4-year deal.
Believe it is.
I'm hearing about this for the first time.
Yeah.
They played each
Yeah,
other
and
in
that
the
was.
Gavitt games, and it was bonkers. It was the most
Yeah, they finally
intense.
got it done.
It was. Do you remember when they did play a 2-year series? It was.
Yes.
It was insane. I mean, you'd have thought it was the Final Four, and it was the. I think they opened the season with each other, and people were camping out for days. It was incredible.
Was intense. Yeah, it was
Yeah.
good. And I think all these examples, one of the things that might get overlooked, is right now, like for the Houston, Texas example, right?
Yeah.
As long as it's Kellen Sampson's Houston program, Texas is going to say hell no. Like, why would we sign up for that? That's tough. It's bloody. It could get ugly. You might lose by 20 plus. You might not even score 50 points, et cetera, et cetera. So much of it is circumstantial based on the head coaches at the time and the rosters coming in the year after. So, like, I truly believe Wichita State, Kansas happened last year because Wichita had the coaching change. They were supposed to be way down, and of course they did finish pretty far down in the AAC. Kansas could easily look at that Wichita team last year and be like, yeah, we'll play them this year. That's just basically another team around 200 that we'll beat by 30 and whatever. But if it's Wichita, all the teams we're thinking of in our nostalgic brains,
Yeah.
they won't play that Wichita,
Right.
right?
And
And so it's got to be a kind of a perfect storm of what the projected roster and who the current head coaches are. So as soon as Ed Cooley got to Georgetown and Willard took Maryland, that could finally happen.
yeah,
Yeah.
they have such a long history. That's true. And
Right.
I do hope you mentioned what 67 new coaches this year, which is an unprecedented amount.
Yes.
I mean, a lot of some of them won't work out, but a lot of them will work out, and a lot of them will be. This will be the first year of a 15-year career at a school for many of those coaches. We don't know which ones, but as those coaches get, comfortable in their jobs and have success, hopefully they can forge kind of those new bonds. Also, this new era with, all the conference moves and We don't know how many conference games the Big Ten's going to go to or the SEC in a couple of years, but I think this year especially you have situations where, especially with the Big 12 schools, and that league is so strong in basketball as it's grown. And it's a little different this year without Oklahoma and Texas, but Oklahoma and Texas going to the SEC. So the Big 12 and the SEC, those are two leagues where their composition's a little different this year than last year. So I think that's leading to some small degree of maybe uncertainty in the out-of-conference scheduling. Everybody's got to see what this looks like now, what this new world looks like with these, especially the Big Ten. I'm fascinated to see what like Oregon and Washington do for out-of-conference scheduling. I'm assuming they're going to stay hyper local because God knows they won't be able to once the conference play starts, and
Exactly
the
right.
impacts of that.
Yeah, that's exactly been the approach, not only from those two, but also with Cal and Stanford in the ACC. They're pretty much all staying here in California throughout non-conference. And same with USC, UCLA. So it's kind of all eight of them, the original Pac-8 doing that. Arizona State's been kind of the wild card. They're going up to Springfield, Massachusetts. It's Bobby Hurley. He's doing things much different. But
Yeah,
the
he's
truth.
going. Dan's hosting Thanksgiving. We know what the deal is up here.
Yeah, that is the deal. Yes. But besides them, I think most of these traditional PAC schools, they're not going anywhere during these first 2 months.
I'll tell you,
Right. I did.
the only other one I could think of, Rocco, is UCLA, but they've got to go to New York for the Champions Classic against
That's
Carolina.
right.
But that's
Yeah.
and they're
So,
not going to give up that opportunity, no,
right?
that's a
So,
huge game for them.
Rocco, they must be like, really, this had to be the New York year where we've got enough travel. Now we're gonna throw that in. But it's
I need
life at
to
the top.
ask Rocco's advice here on something else because he is a scheduling advisor. Another one, Wichita and Creighton need to start playing again. That would really juice that.
Oh.
But Oklahoma State, both of these teams sort of struggle to field. They're again good fan bases, passionate, rocking during conference play. They kind of struggle to fill their arenas in November and December. If you were advising both those teams on who they might be able to schedule that might invigorate and excite the fan base, what would you advise them to do?
Well, first of all, they should play each other.
Yes, bedlam should not be stopping.
And they are playing. They finally did agree they're going to play at the Thunder Arena. So,
Are they
yeah,
really?
they're
Oh.
going to split the tickets 50-50 on December 14th.
Oh, I'm learning all kinds of things today. Okay, I thought that was done.
But I
I
think
thought, oh,
it's going to
yeah,
go
I thought
into
Oklahoma
a.
State said they wouldn't play him in anything. Okay.
Yeah, I think they're doing it kind of like how the Apple Cup worked out in football, where they're playing this year in the Seahawks Stadium for the Football Apple Cup. That'll be
Yeah.
actually next week. But they're doing it. The model is then it goes into a home and home. I think that's where Oklahoma State's heading. But the good news is they are playing because I know in football they're not, and that was a huge story. So I think that's number one answer. But of course, I want to see them play Oral Roberts in Tulsa, of course.
But no,
It's
I was getting
amazing
it, and
how
I didn't realize they were playing one. And I've been, like I said, I've been off this summer. I'm very happy to hear that.
it's amazing how
I'm glad you got refreshed.
bracketeer.org. It's amazing how like everybody's got to try and save face on this. Like, God forbid Oklahoma State got an extra home game. No. Washington's Apple Cup. No, we have to have a neutral site game first. Like, this is like we're at the DMZ here and everyone's going to the little blue house. Like, we're gonna, if Oklahoma let Oklahoma State have an extra home game, you'll be fine. No. All right. Well, at least this works. So as long as they're gonna go back to home and homes after this, that's good news to me. Rocco, unless David, you had other questions, I'm a little curious, but like when I go through the list and you see so many of these schools hosting MTEs, what kind of goes into a school's decision to host an MTE? Like Montana State's hosting one, Montana's hosting one, South Alabama, St. Louis. Like it's, to, in some places you could say, oh, they can sell the travel. I love Bozeman, and I'm a winter guy, but like, Rocco, what tends to go into a school's decision to say, yes, we're going to put together this massive organizational lift for us to get three MTE games teams to come to us?
So Montana State actually represent kind of a larger chunk of those. Non-power, middle of the pack in, 1 through 368, right? Really tough to get two locations. And that means every year it's a challenge schedule-wise to get home games in general. So if they can do their own MTE, then boom, there's three home games in one swoop. So They go and tell the AD, hey, we'd love to host a tournament. Montana, by the way, has now done it, I think, 6 straight years. And this will be like year 2 or year 3 for Montana State. They're up against the same challenge. And so, like, you have to play whatever 13 non-conference games. The only way you're going to get half of those at home in their mind, and maybe realistically, is by hosting a tournament. Get 2, 3 baked in right there in 1 week. And then you can feel a little better about taking another couple of road games on to fill the schedule. And I know it's annoying for their fans and even maybe, you know, their administration to just fill all those, you know, four, if they go to 4 non-Division I games, nobody wants to go to those games, even if they live up in these rural places. And I saw like Tarleton was trying to host one. It didn't work out for them, but there's a lot of those, like, and that's why Brown, for example, they're hosting one all weekend long with Sacred Heart, Holy Cross, New Hampshire. I mean, it's happening like that all over. I don't necessarily like it, but I get it for those types of schools because they may only have like 1 or 2 Division I home games total if
There
they
is
don't
another
do
reason,
it.
Rocco, that you might have been getting to this, but in order to play the full 31, you have to be in an MTV of some sort. And
Of
if
course,
you're a,
yes.
and why would you go to Brown to play in an MTV? Well, if you don't, you only get 29. So,
That's right. Yeah. So
yeah.
you can either do a 2 game or a 3 game. So it's called the 28 plus 3, which gets you to 31, or the 29 plus 2,
Yeah.
to get to 31. And surprisingly, even with all that there's a frustrating amount of schools still not playing one at all, gonna only play 29. Like I looked at Columbia last year, they only played 27
Yeah.
games. Like
Yeah.
it just blows your mind.
That's the Ivy League seems to be tend to be the ones that may do that more than others, though, just, you
Right.
know.
Which you can understand at Columbia, but I mean a place like John Dunn at Marist, I don't think he's played in an
Nope.
MTE in over 8 years.
He just doesn't play in them. I
He just
don't.
won't play in them. He refuses to. I call once a year and that's it. So same answer.
Yeah,
So
Marist is one
it's
of those
just different
weird little.
philosophies.
Yeah, Marist is one of those weird little programs I follow on the side because I have a lot of friends that went there in the television industry, and
It's one of the
I go.
363 programs that Zach follows all
It's true. It really is. It really
the
is.
Beautiful school, by the way. Beautiful school.
Oh, it's amazing. It's gorgeous up there, and it's like, you know, if you want your team to be better, they could play the maximum number of games would be a good start.
Okay. Yeah, given that we have now moved on to Marist's non-conference schedule, I
Yes.
think we've
Yeah,
reached a
that's.
point where we've beaten this horse to death here. But I do want to run through each of you here for any other final thoughts on this subject or anything else. And Zach, why don't you give us a little th final thoughts about basketball in Poughkeepsie, New York, or whatever else you want to discuss here?
Well, no, Chad. I mean, the view from the top—it's beautiful up here. I am. I'm just excited that we're almost at the start of the season. Specifically, that I don't have to think about conference realignment. I'm good, thanks. Or football, honestly. Although I'll be there for UConn football this week. No, just excited that we're getting closer to the season, and that hopefully that for all the negative impacts of all the conference moves, that we can still. Hopefully, we can just enjoy the games for what they are this year. It's going to be very weird seeing a lot of things, but I do one thing I do love about college basketball is a lot of the negative things that have impacted college football from it. Thankfully, college basketball isn't impacted because the schedule is so big. We can still have room for an Oklahoma State Oklahoma game. We can still hopefully I hope we get to a spot in a couple of years here where these in all their different leagues, these Pac-12 te former Pac-12 teams could schedule each other a little bit. I think there's some movement on UCLA Arizona.
Yeah,
Hopefully we
that's
get that,
happening.
but which is great that we're getting that. But like it wouldn't be the end of the world if Oregon played Cal non-conference. I would like to see that, and it's going to be also interesting this year. The two changes in terms of what we do with bracketing, the incorporation of wins above bubble, which is a stat I really like, and I'm thrilled for Bart that I like that the college basketball committee is actually welcoming to outsiders like us when we come up with stuff like that. It's kind of the opposite of how they normally function. I will give them credit for that with things like Net and or BPI and stuff like that. Torvik, obviously, Ken Pomeroy gets the credit. So I'm interested to see the how wins above bubble, how everybody learns it more in depth. And I am regretting the fact that we're going to actually have to find another at-large team this year because we have one more at-large spot. And the thought that Virginia would have been even more safely in last year is quite frankly horrifying, but this is the new reality in which we live.
Rocco.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just getting to the point where, it's going to be exciting to finally see these teams play. Being involved is really exciting, but it's also like staring at the same rosters for 6 months. A lot of these have been set for since the end of April, once the portal started to really start solidifying. And opening night, I think the sport, even though there's been challenges and probably more non-Division One games than ever, that record keeps breaking itself too, just like the coaching changes. But besides those negatives, I think the positive is opening week's getting a lot better. I think Baylor's opening their season with both Gonzaga. That'll be announced soon. They're still trying to figure out if they can play in Mexico City. Stay tuned for that. And then they're playing Arkansas the first weekend. So Baylor could easily and likely will be starting the season with Gonzaga and Arkansas. Scott Drew's a guy we should have mentioned earlier as never afraid to play anybody. So on the highest level, there'll be some big games like that. But I even, where I might land on that night, like the Pentagon, they'll have some awesome games with St. Louis in Josh Schertz's debut playing a really good Santa Clara team that I'm very familiar with. You'll have Charleston against Southern Illinois, which is Coach Nagy versus Coach Mack making their debuts at those schools. And then, of course, anytime McNeese plays anybody significant, it's exciting. And they're taking on South Dakota State, the local team. So fun triple header there. Athletes in action on that night. They just did the grand opening in June for John Wooden Fieldhouse. It's out in the middle of Ohio, pretty close to Dayton. I know it sounds random to everybody, but they put a lot of effort and money into it. And they're going to have FAU open against Indiana State. Again, two new head coaches with John Jacobs for the Owls and, of course, Matt Graves for the Sycamores. That'll be really exciting. Plus, Liberty Valpo playing each other in both men's and women's as part of an all-day festival of basketball. So there's just a lot of cool stuff going on and always trying to build new and better ideas each year. And so it's not all doom and gloom. There's a lot of cool stuff coming.
Absolutely.
This is what I love about Rocco. I didn't know that was happening, and I'm incredulous. I'm gonna that the Lethbridge thing, like I love the weird little things. I don't love the Sanford Pentagon thing. It feels like a little too like, do they need 30 games a year? But I respect the effort.
It's a fun place to play for the players, I've been told, but I
Yeah,
have yet to
fair enough.
visit, so that's hopefully going to change soon.
Griggs.
Well, I guess my first thought is that I am glad that Bedlam is going to continue. I thought it was over and I was moping and other than that, but I do think that a couple of things. It would be much healthier for the sport if we saw more of the types of games that a lot of coaches are real skittish about scheduling. Just in general, like in November and December, it's the only sport, it's still football season, but football doesn't play every night. Basketball is on every night. Every night is an opportunity to be on a stage, and every night where there isn't a showcase game, it's sort of a wasted night for the sport. And there's a lot of games that could be scheduled that would appeal to the type of people and get it on the map that early. Another thing that we didn't get into that I did want to kind of mention is how difficult it is for some of the top caliber under the radar teams to complete their schedules. And some of them end up playing non-D1 opponents, not because they want to, but because they literally couldn't find anyone else. Rocco can probably speak to this and correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't I know McNeese State reached out to, like, literally, and this is not hyperbole, didn't they contact like 300 schools trying to get games? Nobody would play them. One year, I remember Stephen F. Austin posted on Basketball Travelers. I don't remember the exact wording, but it was essentially, we will go on the road and play for nothing. Still couldn't get games. It's almost a shame that some of these top under the radar schools can't get games, in much less the kind of games that against Power Fives or programs that would give them a chance to establish themselves. The fact that they can't isn't just not good for them. I think it's bad for the sport. It's a missed opportunity.
It is, yes. McNeese's case, to answer your question real quick, they were stuck on trying to get anybody decent to come play there. Nobody wanted to go to Lake Charles. Santa Clara, to their credit, is going. They took the game. So you will see Santa Clara at McNeese in early December. Should be awesome. And then, Stephen F. Austin example.
That was a few years ago, yeah.
Last year, it was actually Princeton did the same thing, and they went to St. Joe's for free and beat them.
Yeah, as long as the Mississippi University for Women men's program is available for McNeese, they'll be fine.
On that note, I do want to thank you for joining us. Keep an eye on the website, by the way. Our season previews content is just starting to go up over the course of the next 2 months. There's going to be a lot of stuff going up there. I think John Tytel has already begun his interviews. And we got a
Yes.
lot more content coming up. Some of the old stuff from last year is going to start disappearing off out of the next few weeks here. Even more importantly, if you want to keep up to date on the scheduling, I hate to do this, Griggs, but don't go to hoopshe.com. Go to
Yeah, go to
bracketeer.org.
bracketeer.org.
I'm promoting against our website, but for the website to go to for scheduling, and make sure you follow Rocco on Twitter as well. But on behalf of Griggs, Rocco Miller, Zach Singer, and all those UConn fans that are cheering for having joined the Big 12. Oh, wait,
All
never
right. All
mind.
right. All right. That's the shirt. This is back to back champs. Okay, fine.
Thank you.
I'll make it.
I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining, everybody. We will talk to you again, probably in a couple of weeks here.